Today I'm in Bristol with Chris Priddy. Chris, what's your job title?
I have a lovely long job title, which is Head of Parish and External Relations, which I like to think of as anything in a parish or not in a parish, which is everything. And I work that through.
Well, we'll come back to the question about parishes. That raises some interesting questions about about parishes, doesn't it, in a minute. So the first question is when and where did we first meet?
We must have met through work within the diocese, I guess, and with your parishes in Box and around there. But I'm not sure exactly, but through work. I didn't know you before this role.
No, it must have been, I don't know, some diocesan synod or something, I would have thought.
I do love a diocesan synod, so yeah, I would have thought so.
Yeah, I haven't had a place on diocesan synod for a while, so yeah.
And it was clearly such an exciting meeting that I have marked the date in my head forever. Sorry.
Do you drink tea?
I do drink tea. I drink tea first in the morning, so tea is my first drink of the day. Then I tend to move on to coffee, usually end the working day about with a cup of tea in the kind of early afternoon. So yeah, I kind of do tea, coffee, tea.
Okay. And what's your favourite cup of tea?
I generally exclusively drink Yorkshire tea.
I might ask you about the Yorkshire tea fair trade conundrum then. Is that something which weighs on your heart?
So, I guess I split 50-50. So I drink Yorkshire tea at home and I drink, we have fair trade tea in the office. So there is a split there. Not especially at home. I think there's a sense in which Yorkshire tea is Rainforest Alliance, isn't it, which isn't quite as good. But I do like a strong cup of tea, so I've chosen on strength, I guess. And then you get into a habit, don't you, where you just get stuck.
See, we drink the Cafe Direct tea, direct.
Which we do here.
Which I really like, actually. So it's easy for me to be... to be a bit holier than everyone else about this, but yeah, yes, I will try not to be sanctimonious about it. So how do you respond to the statement Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
I love the way that the conversation flicks from do you drink tea and what's your favourite cup of tea to this extremely other end of the spectrum question on is the church dying or sleeping. I think neither. I think perhaps the church is perhaps slightly distracted and not thriving, but good news in terms of the gospel of Jesus Christ is alive for all people in all generations. And I think people are remarkably spiritual and interested in spirituality, but equally that sometimes we get in the way of the Spirit and in presenting faith to people. So I was out cycling around... the Mulvans on the weekend, and there was a village hall with a big banner outside that said it was advertising the event, which was discover your spirituality, and we see lots of those kind of courses or places where people can go and explore different forms of spirituality. And I was just reflecting and going, I wish that sign was outside one of our churches. And it was basically an alpha course, but we branded it and advertised it as enabling people to explore their spirituality and find faith through that. So I don't think Christianity is dying at all, but I think, or asleep, I just think that the church doesn't always make it very accessible for people to explore Christianity and the Christian faith and to understand how it connects with them and is meaningful in the 21st century and to people's lives.
Mm.
Where did the quote come from?
It's from an article in The Telegraph by someone called Tim Stanley. Okay. So far, I've declined my request for interviews. And... yeah, and I read the article about 18 months ago, maybe 2 years ago, and I didn't know what I thought about it. Mm. So being a proper extrovert, I thought I'd ask a lot of people to see what they thought about it.
I think I do see a distinction between church and Christianity, and I think sometimes church being our kind of vehicle for making Christianity accessible to people can be difficult, because we can be often very insular looking and not very good at enabling people to connect with spirituality and Christianity and faith through the church. So I think that's our challenge.
And one of the particular things for me is that so where I am, we've got two kind of big parishes and a small parish, and one of the two big parishes had more people last year at the weekday worship and regular events than on Sundays. And the other one certainly had more people at the weekday and Sunday afternoon events than on Sunday mornings.
Yep.
So how we measure things is really important for us, and I'm not sure that our average Sunday attendance is not great, but that doesn't mean that our average weekday attendance isn't huge, but it's not necessarily very well measured in the Church of England stats.
Yeah, because with the three measures of average Sunday attendance, average weekly attendance, and worshipping community, and I really like the worshipping community stat, although I realise it's a finger in the air. I like the idea of we're measuring how many people are encountering faith and God and worshipping with you and engaging in an active Christianity through that. It feels like a nice, broad group of people to consider. But I mean, I reflect on my own life, and yeah, actually, Sunday morning is a really difficult time. We don't do weekdays and weekends. My wife's a children's nurse, so we do a 7-day working week. Nine times out of ten, one of us is working on a weekday, on a weekend day, sorry. And Sunday morning might be, if you've only got Sunday as a day to actually do family, then Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock is a great time to do church, because it means we can do something during the day, reconnecting where we haven't seen each other all week, and the kids have been in breakfast and after school club, so they've been busy, and we've just seen them for bedtime effectively. So to be able to do a 4 o'clock service at the end of a Sunday, having done something together as a family, works really well for us. 11 o'clock morning service is slightly more problematic when you're trying to get the kids home because they're hungry at the end of the service and all of that. I think there's a changing, changing society means that we need different services to connect with different people, and weekdays as well. Absolutely.
So there's quite a few of our weekday attenders who don't come on a Sunday because their time when they're free to come to church is in the week.
In our parish at Christmas, the carols by candlelight, they ran on a Wednesday evening because they couldn't find an organist for the Sunday, but it was packed out, completely packed out, and I kind of thought, well, yeah, we assume that Sunday is the day when services like that have to happen, but there's no reason why actually midweek events can't be successful as well.
I've never thought about moving the carols by candlelight to a midweek.
I mean, this is more about practicality than any kind of other overriding reason.
That's
but
often how God shoves us in that direction, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Moving on to your specialist questions. They're not difficult at all. If you could change one thing about the Church of England, what would it be?
So I was thinking this through, having been last Friday at the Renewal and Reform Symposium, where they were looking at what had happened through Renewal and Reform over the last 12-18 months, and they'd thrown out the question, what one piece of church legislation would you change if you could, and we're gathering in results and talking about those. I must admit, I didn't feel like I could name very many pieces of church legislation because I don't work in the governance team, but thinking broader than some of the things they came up with, I reckon I would make church building maintenance covered by a central budget and a central team. So you remove that responsibility and difficulty from the PCC and the clergy. So actually, if a church roof needs replacing, whoever's in the parish rings up the central team and they sort that out and pay for it. Because then you would release that, the whole church focus would shift from maintaining a whole element of it, of maintaining the building and the element of the place, to releasing that energy for mission and ministry, and I think that could be quite interesting and quite releasing.
And yet one of our authorised Anglican places of worship does meet in a building which we don't have responsibility for, and it's lovely. I get the keys, yeah. I unlock the door, we do church, we tidy up, I lock up again and I take the keys back.
Yeah.
It's brilliant on many levels, although actually then changing anything that we might want to change becomes very problematical.
Which is why I think in my vision of the future, we would retain the responsibility for the buildings. We would just centrally sort it all out. A bit like, so with all our clergy housing, if your toilet breaks down, you ring up and we fix it. And someone comes out and fixes it. But that kind of taking the responsibility and the issue of maintenance away from the responsibility of the PCC would release that kind of time and energy to do the things that actually people really want to be doing. I like our buildings though, so I'm not sure I'd go as far as suggesting we got rid of all the church buildings and we just met in community centres or places like that, because actually I think there is something about the National Trust has this phrase called a spirit of place, that all of their places have a spirit of place, and I think that speaks to me something around church buildings, that actually there are thin spaces, places where God's presence is felt, and I see that in our church buildings, and I like their spirit of place and connect with God through those places. So I think I'd keep them, but just removing that maintenance burden, so we just sorted all that out.
What's interesting though with the faculty system over the past 5 years, for example, we have probably used hundreds and hundreds of volunteer hours to use the faculty system, and I would, if we were trying to replace that with paid people, that would be a big financial burden.
Yeah,
I think that's in a perfect world, yeah, where money wasn't a problem, it would be brilliant.
Exactly, yes. As with all
definitely
these problems,
the way forward.
One of the things at the symposium was about removing patronage would make life so much easier. And you're like, but actually, if you work that through logically, that means you have to turn to the crown, the queen, and say, we want you to give this up, please. And actually, that's an unrealistic situation to be in, because it's practically treasonous to say to the queen, we want to take this away from you. So difficulties in when you work some of these things through.
Yeah. The next not difficult question at all is, do you think the parish system is useful for mission and ministry in the 21st century?
Yes. I'm not an Anglican by background. I'm an ordained Baptist. But what I love about the Anglican system was then the parish system is that we've got everywhere covered, and I think that's great. By dividing up the nation into parishes, we've got everywhere covered, in terms of there being a Christian presence in every community, and I think that's really strong, and also really good. But equally, there are challenges there. One is that it's not enough. Having a church in every community, every parish, isn't enough, because what we've got is particular churchmanships in particular parishes, but that particular churchmanship doesn't connect with everyone in that parish. Actually, you need 2 or 3, 4, 5 different expressions of church to reach all of the people within in that parish, because there are different pockets and different communities. So that's one issue, and then there's the boundaries issue, that as soon as we put up these artificial boundaries, people stop working with those that are on the other side of the boundary, or you're not, it's a them and us mentality you create, and I think that's an issue. So we're trying to address that with some of our mission area projects, where we've got a parish working with its neighbours to do things together that are best done together in mission, but equally to carry on doing the things separately that are best done separately. So not removing the identity of each parish church, but saying actually let's work together wherever possible.
Yeah, people have been trying to get people to actually do that ever since I was ordained.
Yeah. We've seen some really encouraging progress. The process we've gone through of actually getting clergy and people to pray together and lay people to pray together first to see what happens, to then develop vision that says this is what we want, this is what we could do together, to then covenant together and say, okay, we're going to make a public commitment in front of one another to lay aside past challenges in working together, but to commit together to this vision that we've seen, to then work through what are the plans then? What does that mean we're going to do and in order to achieve that vision? And that kind of process has seemed to have been relatively fruitful, with this underlining agreement that we won't try and change everywhere to be the same. We'll just do the things together that are best done together, and not the things that are not.
Yeah, I think where we are, I'm really blessed that I have quite a big team. So we offer a huge variety of worship within our geographical area. Mm. Almost every flavour is represented. And some people do travel from one place to another to sort of be part of that. But it does mean we end up, although we've only got 6,000 people, we end up with normally 8 services on a Sunday. Mm. Plus the week services, so the juggling becomes an interesting management issue.
And that, I think there's the shift there between the we provide 8 different styles of service to saying actually there are, with the people here, there are 8 different styles that people seem to be wanting to connect with. So how do we help them
to run services that work for that community expressing itself in that style. And that's easier said than done, but that kind of thing of rising up people to...
Yeah, I mean, we have a huge team of lay people who lead some of our services who are magnificent. So we're very... Yeah. That we're actually quite a long way along that line. I thought I'd better ask you an urban and rural spirituality question. How should a diocese be aware of the differences between urban and rural spirituality in mission?
So I was reflecting and thinking, we don't have a lot of rural in our diocese. In fact, I don't think we have any rural. I don't think you can call any area rural when it's no more than 20 minutes from the M4, ultimately. What we have is a lot of villages. So we kind of see that we have urban ministry and village ministry, rather than deeply rural, where there are sparsely populated hamlets with miles and miles before you reach anywhere that's populated. But I think ultimately what I've seen and observed in the last couple of years is that everywhere is different. So even making kind of category distinctions doesn't work. I sat with one of our area deans of the Wiltshire area, and he was saying, well, I've got six parishes that I look after, but you can't look at them and go, well, that's six village parishes, and go, well, that's how they are, because actually they're all different. So this parish exists very differently to that parish, and the community there is very different to the community there, even though they're side by side parishes. So you can't put them in one box and just go, well, that's Johnny's six village parishes, because it doesn't work that way. And then equally, I've been in gatherings of deprived parishes across the diocese, where again it'd be easy to box them and say, well, those are the six vicars from our six most deprived parishes in the diocese. But again, listening to them, the way they do ministry, the context they're doing ministry, and the communities they're reaching are all very different, with very different needs. So I think ultimately we have 165 different parishes that are all different, and we need to... The challenge for a diocese in supporting and equipping ministry and mission in 165 areas is to try and understand 165 very different areas, very different communities. Often each parish will have multiple communities in it, so there's more than 165. But to try and equip people for mission in a way that is contextualised for their parish and for their area. So I think it's that understanding of context is massively important, but not just boxing it up and saying, well, we've got some urban and we've got some rural, or we've got some urban and we've got some deprived within that, or kind of everywhere is different. So we try not to say, you need to do this because we think this will work everywhere. We kind of say, look, here are some practices or some principles that we think that work. What does that look like where you are? So our vision is a vision and not a strategy. It's not a strategy that says every parish should do X, Y, and Z. It's a vision that says collectively we're seeking to connect with God, each other, and our communities. Quite broad statements, but what does that look like for your parish where you are? And it will look different everywhere, and that's great, because actually that local interpretation is what's necessary within this umbrella that unites us, so we're part of one thing.
The last question is the one which people find most difficult. What's your favourite thing that begins with T?
This morning we Googled things that begin with T just to try and come up with a list, because it's really hard. Sat there going, what is it? I had one cheat one, which was the countryside, but then we thought the doesn't really... that really is cheating. But I love the countryside. I love getting out, and particularly on days like today when it's beautifully sunny. And then I think I ended up on training. And whilst I'm not an athlete or anything, I do in every week book in sessions of running and cycling and gym work, because I've been training for various events this year, for the London Marathon, for a couple of half marathons, for some slightly epic bike rides. And I love that, kind of planning and training as to what I'm going to do to build up to achieving a particular goal. I'm very much a planner.
That's a really very biblical concept, isn't it?
Run the race that's set before you.
Absolutely. So that's the end of our questions. So thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you.